welcome to the Peak Work Performance Summit, where we talk about practical ways we can all become smarter, healthier, and more productive. I'm Ron Friedman, and my guest today is productivity expert Laura Stack. Laura is an award-winning keynote speaker and the best-selling author of 7 books. Her newest book is called Doing the Right Things Right: How the Effective Executive Spends Time. In the interview you're about to watch, Laura offers concrete advice on what to do when you're feeling overwhelmed. She shares her tips for outsourcing the tasks you don't want to do so you can focus on your true passion. And she reveals a trap we're all in danger of falling prey to: not knowing the true value of our time. Here's my interview with Laura Stack. Enjoy. Thank you so much for being part of this event. You have a term in your upcoming book that I absolutely love, and it is infobesity. Tell us, what is infobesity and how do we prevent it from happening to us?
Well, infobesity, as the term might imply, is just a glut, in this case, of information. Too many ads, too many emails, too many blogs, content, irrelevant information really that comes at you all day long, distracting you from focusing on those things that are of high value during the day. So many things that you can do. Obviously, you want to set some filters on your email. This is something that a lot of people don't know you can even do, to turn off what are called the global alerts, so that every time you get an email, you're not changing your mouse cursor, getting a sound, getting an envelope in the system tray, getting your cursor spinning, whatever happens on your screen. And then set a rule so that if you get an email from a particular person, then you'll get a sound. That way, if you do distract yourself, you know that it's from somebody who's important. You also want to make sure to set automatic filing rules so that it's not in your inbox with the real information that you need during the day. So I have rules, for example, that are set up that say anytime I get something with LinkedIn in the subject or from a LinkedIn discussion group, move it to this folder. Anytime it says Facebook, move it to this folder. If it's from a restaurant, shopping, coupons, newsletters, things that you get that you want to review at some point, but you don't want it in your inbox, all that should be skimmed off. And of course, just be very careful as you're doing your business online to make sure that you're actually doing real business. So many people get caught up clicking on links, clicking on ads, going off. You know, my mom, the psychologist, calls that OSS, ooh, shiny syndrome. So people have OSS and they don't stay focused on the reason that they're there. So basically, we just have to control ourselves and put up some barriers and some boundaries from all of this irrelevant information that comes in all day, distracting us from our important work.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on something that's so critical, which is that we find ourselves inundated with so much information. And one of the things that happens when we're constantly inundated and kind of dealing with all those distractions is that it becomes really difficult to prioritize. That's the first thing that goes when you're feeling stressed out and overwhelmed, as it becomes really difficult to prioritize and suddenly everything feels urgent. So one step that you point out is minimizing the distractions that are eating up our resources, our cognitive resources throughout the day. But the title of your next book is Doing the Right Things Right. So aside from minimizing distractions, what else should we be doing in order to focus on the right things?
That's a great question. I think people get focused on the wrong things because they're so overwhelmed. They're so paralyzed. You know, if they have 117 things to do, it's kind of difficult to decide what to do next. You know, they'll prioritize, as you say. But I think the real challenge after being a professional speaker now for 25 years and talking with so many audience members, they come up to me and they tell me really what's happening is in the moment when you choose what to do next. I think that's where most people go off the rails with prioritization. It's kind of this decision dilemma when you're looking at too much and you're saying to yourself, okay, what's next? You could literally do 37 different things right there. So people don't have clarity in the moment of decision. And I find in general that there are five different patterns that people are using, kind of maybe doing the wrong things wrong instead of the right things right. Some people do things based on what they feel like doing. So they're tempted to do something fun or easier or trivial or quick because they like to check things off. They want to get a sense of accomplishment. Other people tend to do things in order that they appear, which is why it's a big problem sitting in your inbox all day, because we know emails don't come in priority order. Some people do things based on who's screaming the loudest, which we know, you know, people have fake crises. And if you're the type that doesn't have good boundaries with a squeaky wheel, so to speak, you tend to do things in the wrong order. Some people tend to do things as they think of them. You know, ooh, I need to make that call. Ooh, I need to send that back. Ooh, I need to do that. And so they're not really focused on those important projects. And then some people just do things in random order, depending on sticky notes and piles of paper, and or they have 17 half-started emails on their screens. It just very random and distracted kind of pattern. So I would say today to be very aware of what you do in that moment of decision. Are you doing based on the fun thing, what you think of, what comes in first, instead of really looking at what is the order based on value, impact, output, results, sales, profitability, whatever it is by which you're measured in your particular job, and making sure you're making those purposeful choices rather than feeling so overwhelmed and kind of defaulting to one of those other patterns.
I really love the point you just made, which is that how we manage our time is often a result of an emotional decision rather than a strategic decision.
Yes.
And I wonder, in your life, what do you do to ensure that you're always thinking strategically about what to do next instead of having to force yourself to consider, is this the best use of my time? Because that is an effortful process. So we don't want to have to utilize our resources to constantly make decisions. How do you minimize the decisions that you're making?
Well, a lot of it is workflow. A lot of it is minimizing the decision in the first place because it's already been decided and you just automatically know what to do next. The most
example.
Well, for example, if an email comes into your inbox and you can't delete it and you can't forward it and you need to reply to it, and you can't reply to it right now and you don't want to file it because you might lose it. So then I'm just going to keep it as new or flag it. If you don't know what to do with that email, if you don't know how to convert an email into a task and put a date on it and put it in a prioritized list on your task list automatically, then you're going to, as soon as you start to say, I need to, bam, you need to know what to do with that information, where it goes, what is the priority? Because without that prioritized task list, when you leave work every night, I already know exactly what order I'm going to do things until the next thing comes in. So there needs to be a continual ability to move, triage, workflow, all of that information. And if you can't process like that, then there's something broken with your system. And so that's a lot of it. People just, they're paralyzed just by the sheer amount of things they perceive they need to do. But when it really comes right down to it, for some people, there really isn't as much to do as they think there is. They're just feeling overwhelmed by what they think might be falling through the cracks or what they don't know they don't know. And so making sure sometimes to periodically get away, to be strategic, to think, maybe not take your computer, just go to a Starbucks with a pad of paper and a pencil. You know, sometimes just writing down everything on your mind. And then putting that in a prioritized list. I use Outlook. There are all kinds, obviously, of different apps and devices out there. But this is how I write my books. I mean, you can't always just be in your space. I like to go to hotels and I check in on a Friday and I check out on a Sunday just to get away from that day-to-day type of thing. So there can be many different reasons why people aren't thinking strategically, whether it's workflow, not giving themselves enough thinking room, not having a third place to go. So it really depends on the person.
So the title of your previous book is What to Do When There's Too Much to Do. So what's your advice for people who are facing a deadline or are starting to feel overwhelmed?
Well, for them, they're going to need to sit down and outline a plan of attack and making sure to go through, just like when, you know, if you have to write a book, what you were talking about. There's so much that goes into that in the way of research and outlines and marketing and the writing time. And if you don't have a project plan and that's not worked into your workflow along with all the other projects that you have going on, you know that you're not going to be able to get this piece finished in time to do this piece, in time to do this piece. And so a lot of that is your classic organizing, planning, prioritizing, scheduling. And so perhaps some people may need to revisit that system if they don't feel like they have a good project management plan in place.
What if it's a client emergency? What if you've got a great system, but three clients call you and say, I need this report by Monday and it's Friday night. You're feeling really, really stressed out. It's not, the problem isn't your system. It's just you've got too much stuff coming in. What do you do?
Well, of course, you have to be flexible and you have to realize who your best customer is, but you don't have to say no to you don't have to say yes to customers either. You can say no to customers. So oftentimes there is a way to set boundaries, to push back, to negotiate, to compromise. And there are often ways that you can say, what is it that I can do for you by then? I won't be able to do this. I can do this. I can't do this piece, but I can do this piece. You know, sometimes I find out just discovering what's going on behind that. What's the real need? I've had clients ask me, okay, by, you know, tomorrow I need your handouts and your slide and, you know, all these things. It's like, whoa, my speech isn't for 6 months. You know, what's really going on? Oh, well, actually, we're just trying to get this on our website. So how about a title and a description and a photo by tomorrow, right? And these other pieces. So sometimes you have to help clients think through those types of requests rather than losing your weekend and just going, okay, and saying yes to everything. And so I think a little negotiation and pushback would be quite reasonable in that case.
Mm-hmm. Now, you write that to be productive, we need to be able to differentiate between availability and accessibility. Tell us about that.
Well, so many people are way too available. They are just, you know, you can call me, you can come in, you can, I'm free here. And, you know, they end up doing their work after hours when either everyone's gone, or in the case of many entrepreneurs, it cuts into their family time, or they're working evenings, nights, weekends, because they haven't done a good job about limiting their availability. I like to think about accessibility. I'm not available to everyone at anyone's whim, but I am accessible to an extent within certain parameters that I've already defined. And it isn't something that you just lay down the law. You know, if you have a team of people, you want to have discussions around that. What kind of weekly meetings can I set up with my key team members? You know, do you have those one-on-one set up where you're going to coach people on a regular basis? You can't just leave that to chance, because if you do, then you end up getting those kind of drop-ins, whether it's a text or a call or an email or someone's physically in your office. So I think many people are over available. One of my clients has Microsoft, and he has what he calls GM hours, general manager hours. And he said, think about when we were in school and the professors had office hours. So it's kind of scheduling your interruptions in advance. It's not being available to everyone at any time, but it's being accessible within certain times and certain parameters. His, I don't remember what his GM hours were. It was like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 to 11 or 1 to 3, you know. But by proactively telling people, I welcome your visits and any questions during these hours, guess when people showed up? During those hours, right? And so I think that accessibility is a process of creating those periods of times where you will be available to ensure that you have periods of time where you can actually do your work, focus, concentrate, be strategic. You know, everyone says, you know, we want our people to be strategic enablers of business, but they don't give them any time to be strategic. People are interrupted all day long. Some teams are coming up with some pretty creative ways to use signals, whether everybody wears a red baseball cap or they put a flag up, or, you know, they'll have a little stop sign at the door or something. You can't have it up all day, but within maybe three 30-minute periods or a 90-minute period a day, where when someone sees that signal, they know not to interrupt you. So I think that's where people are really trying to get creative, is how can I make sure I have time to focus on my real work without feeling like, no, I don't have time for you. Mm-hmm. So it's finding that middle ground with people.
I really like that point about setting some time aside at the end of each day and saying to your colleagues, if you need me, you can reach me between the hours of, say, 3 to 5. But what if you're an entrepreneur and the people you're dealing with are clients? How do you set boundaries without risking losing business?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I've been for 25 years, you know, but I still have very specific parameters. I don't start conference calls until a certain time. And I don't take conference calls after a certain time because I'm home-based. I have 3 children, you know, I want to exercise. I have all these things. So it's a matter of letting other people know when you are available. It means blocking out your calendar. It means making appointments. Yeah, they don't have to know. It's a meeting with yourself to work. You just let them know when you are available. And without making excuses, I don't let people who are on the East Coast know I'm available anytime, right? Because what if they say 8 o'clock? Well, my time, that's 6 a.m., which is going to be chaotic for me because I have a dog and cats and children running around. So I think we just have to get very good about being direct and confident and offering our accessibility. Here's when I'm accessible. Rather than being completely available to everyone. I'm also really good about putting my phone on airplane mode so that I'm not getting texts and the phone ringing and things while I'm trying to focus. Hey, I fly over 100,000 miles a year. When I'm on a plane, I'm not available. The world has not fallen apart. Clients have not fired me because I haven't been able to return their email within 5 hours. So I just think that we need to get realistic about what that should look like.
There's a great section in your book about knowing the financial value of your time and how that can help you decide how your time is best spent. So I'm wondering if you can give us an example or two of mistakes you've noticed people making when they don't know the financial value of their time.
Oh my gosh, that is a great question. I've said to myself, I've seen it all. And then I see something even crazier. I know I have not seen it all. I've seen CEOs who are typing their own meeting minutes, who are handling their calendars. I mean, we're talking about people who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, who may be having problems with declining revenues or not hitting their numbers or not hitting their goals. And you're wondering, well, no wonder you're spending your time doing $15 an hour types of things. You know, they say in an effort to, you know, save the company money. And so I look at a concept of a personal return on investment. Everyone is used to ROI. We talk about that all the time, but what's the PROI? What's your personal return on the investment of time you're making in this particular activity in terms of the result that it's going to create for your organization? And so many people, because over the years with technology becoming less expensive, more autonomy, our organizations getting flatter and flatter and flatter, more administrative layers, middle management layers being stripped out. Now it's like, congratulations, you do the work. And so I have seen a lot of areas where administrative support has been brought back in. Entrepreneurs are one of the worst at this because, well, I could do that and I can do that, and right? But then they're up until midnight doing things that they can hire someone for $20 an hour to do, where perhaps their time is worth hundreds of dollars per hour. So I look at, what are you uniquely capable and qualified to do? Why are you here? You know, ultimately, why? What are those key responsibilities that your organization relies on you to do? And then anything that doesn't fall under one of those areas, we need to either outsource or delegate or eliminate, right? Or find someone else in our organization. I've seen CFOs who are doing their own expense reports. I've seen senior leaders who are booking their own travel and calling the car service and calling the hotel and doing things that, you know, it's always a good acid test to say, is this something that if I had unlimited resources and I could hire this out, could I get someone else to do this? It's amazing how many people now with Upwork, you know, formerly Elance and Odesk, where you can hire just about anything. I have probably 25 different independent contractors right now doing work for me that either I or one of my three employees shouldn't be doing because it's not within their PROI and those key responsibilities. So that's something you have to talk about with your team and with your manager. I mean, if you said, hey, what are the top three things you think I'm responsible for? And they make a list and you make a list and you compare them. Are they the same?
So I like the example of Upwork because I have recently noticed the benefits of that too. And I'm wondering if Upwork were to disappear tomorrow, what like three or four tasks would you most miss having being done by someone else?
Oh my gosh, I have my graphics done through there. I had a project of just scanning photos. I have PowerPoint slides that are done. I need this graphic animated. I need this flyer done, a banner. I mean, they're random things where it doesn't make sense for me to employ a full-time PowerPoint expert or graphics designer or someone who can add this banner on a website, those kinds of things. And so now that, you know, you have your key people in your pocket, those are the types of people that would definitely be missed.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the question I asked earlier about not knowing the value of your time, you have this great example, and I just want to bring it up because I think people would enjoy hearing this because I think a lot of people can relate to this, of trying to save your company money by taking a hotel room that's not at the conference site. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's kind of a running joke with me and really colleagues of the National Speakers Association, because we go to conferences and we have a hotel block. You know, maybe you're at a Marriott and the hotel rate is, you know, $249. And someone goes, well, I can spend $189 and go down the street and stay there. And talking about the differences in transportation, your time walking, I mean, even when I go to the airport, I don't drive myself. I hire someone to drive me because it isn't worth the hour that it takes me to drive myself, what I could be doing if I weren't schlepping myself over to the airport, or in this case, schlepping yourself over to the hotel. They're missing out on those hours of networking and interaction. I think you just miss out on a lot when you don't actually locate yourself at the conference hotel. It's like, come on, spend a few extra bucks and save yourself hours of time in between. So it just kind of defeats the purpose.
And the point there is that if you're staying 15 minutes away from the conference site, the amount of time that you're spending having to walk over, walk back each time, that amounts to, you know, if you're spending an hour doing that per day, think about what you're getting paid per hour. And are you saving that much? If you're saving $100, let's say it's a $249 versus $149, is it worth $100 to save an hour of your time? Whereas that, you know, if you can meet one potential client, then that certainly pays for itself.
Yeah. And it's not just the $100. It's the multiplier of that. It's the thousands of dollars of the deal that you missed because you were spending that hour walking rather than networking and being there with your clients or prospective clients.
Mm. And so one final question for you, Laura. You also talk about the importance of the speed of your thinking in terms of how that influences how productive you are. And one recommendation you offer for speeding up how quickly you think is taking an acting class. And I thought that was a very interesting recommendation. And so I'm curious, have you taken an acting class? And if so, has it benefited you in some concrete ways?
Oh gosh, you're calling me on my own writing. I have taken an acting class. In fact, I've taken many, many acting classes. I was very involved in theater growing up, middle school, high school. My first play, I was 8 years old. I played Nyana in South Pacific with the cadets at the Air Force Academy. So I learned a lot by acting, through acting in drama, and as an adult, continued to do that, but more in terms of improvisational comedy. I would really recommend everyone take improvisational comedy. It's amazing what it does to cause you to keep that brain moving quickly. You have to think on your feet. You have to be ready for something that's thrown at you out of left field. And even if you just learn how to take more time to answer a question and stall professionally, that's a great tool to have. But I think that even if you're, say, a salesperson and you're in front of your customers and you're getting some really tough questions, that helps you think better on your feet. It just makes your brain force itself to work more quickly. So I have taken those classes. My kids are all in drama. I think it's an incredibly important skill to be able to stand up in front of a group of people, project confidence, speak your piece, say what you believe in a confident way, and to be able to handle things that you're unprepared for. It's great for innovation, creativity. I think there's all kinds of benefits that would come out of improv. Highly recommend it.
Terrific. Well, Laura Stack, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.